everyone. I'm Tony Lontis, and this is the Everyday Business Show.
I'm going to do it to the best of my ability, because if I fail, that means I fail for my entire female nation, I call it.
Is that possible? That was the question for myself. And it is absolutely possible.
Good afternoon, Australia. Good evening, America. And welcome to everyone across the planet. A big shout out to those who are listening in Germany this evening. This is the Everyday Business Show, and I'm your host, Tony Lontis. And if you're listening live on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter, we have the gorgeous Hannah ready and waiting to respond to your questions, comments, and provide you with links to anything that we talk about on the show today. Additionally, if you are driving, then jump on to tonylottis.com, look under the co-host and a guest section on the website, and you will find links to our guest today. A reminder too that you can find the replays of any of these shows on Binge Networks USA, Hero Go TV USA, and soon they'll also be available on Zondra TV Networks USA, the Tony TV channel app, available on all Roku, LG, and Samsung smart TVs across the planet. Now, we're going to do a little welcome to country before we get on with the show, and I want to respectfully acknowledge the people of the Yugambeh language region, that's on the Gold Coast, Queensland, Australia, the traditional owners of the land on which we meet and broadcast, and pay my respects to the elders past and present, and all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples here today. Now, I have a friend of mine on the show today, a guy by the name of Matt Boyle from Online to Offline. And as you know, each week on the business show, we predominantly talk to entrepreneurs, CEOs, company experts across the planet, and today is no different. So Matt likes to separate himself from the others. And the one thing that separates an abundance of new clients and those who don't is strategy. And that's having the right strategy to consistently prospect for new business opportunities, the right strategy to consistently follow up old leads and customers, the right strategy to consistently market to their databases, and the right strategy to consistently build and engage with audiences across multiple platforms. Matt says it's not complicated, but it does take one thing most sales teams lack, and that's time. So it's in this gap where the team from O2O, online to offline, help. And they help with the right systems and the right team that is outsourced to benefit you and your business. And today we're going to be talking about how O2O achieved this for their global client base, and also about Matt's really interesting story about being in business. So welcome to the show, Matt. I'm so glad to have you here.
Hi. Absolute pleasure.
Now, Matt is joining us today from a remote location, and he's using Wi-Fi so that we could have this show today. He's actually on holidays, and for our US audience, Australia has a long 4-day weekend over Easter. So that's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, public holidays. Not much happens, and lots of people take that opportunity to have a break, and Matt and his family are no different. Matt, I wanted to start today just talking a little bit about you and your journey in business, because it's a really interesting story, and it all started when you were working as a salesman. So let's go back and tell the audience what's happened in those intervening years.
Well, it was way back in 2006, 2007. I was in the automotive industry, and I happened to see the butterfly flapping its wings. And I happened to just notice that there was a few small shifts in how people were buying cars. You know, for years it had always been Saturdays would be the day that people would come out and do their research, and then you would close them during the week. But what I started just noticing was the people that were coming in on Saturday already started to have the information they needed, and we're getting a lot more inquiries over the internet. So I walked into the dealership that I was at, and the dealer principal and the owner, who was a very, very successful entrepreneur, and I went and just said, there's something changing with this internet. We need to figure it out. And so I basically spent the next 3 years locked in a dungeon at the back of the dealership figuring out how to sell cars over the internet. And, you know, this was back then where everyone kind of thought it was a joke.
Mm.
And I'd be sitting there and I'd be taking photos of cars and putting them on the internet and figuring out how to, you know, the best angles to take photographs of and the best comments. And then when you started to get inquiries through, how to actually respond to those inquiries and convert those inquiries. And there was a huge amount of kind of trial and error that went into figuring all this stuff out. But within 3 years, I turned that department there to that was actually now selling 35% of the dealership's total stock. And we were massively profitable. We're actually outproducing from a profit per vehicle the normal retail departments. And it just was sort of mind-blowing. So I was able to leverage that. And because right about then in 2010, 2011, that's when other dealerships started going, heck, there's a
thing called the internet.
And the strategies of just discount our price and put the cars online and discount, is it making us any money? How can we do it? So I happen to be the one that had all the answers at the right time when people were asking all the questions. So I was able to kind of exit out of the dealership that I was working in and start my own sales training company designed to help get on the internet and be more effective. More effective over the internet. And just through timing and again, having all the answers to the questions that people were looking for, I was able to grow that fairly quickly into 4 offices around Australia. And for a sort of fleeting moment, having the largest automotive training company in the country. So it was an interesting kind of journey and a, you know, powerful couple of years of growth. Mm.
Yeah. So what happened, what changed to cause you to go from automotive sales into the next stage?
Well, it was a combination of a couple of things that the automotive industry, and as I was sort of training, it was massively profitable, but it was horribly unfulfilling. You know, I would spend my days convincing people that they needed help and had to prove to them that I knew my stuff and that being able to, you know, sell this way was more effective. So you had that kind of thing and you put up with it because the pay was amazing. But then through a series of events, I met a guy and ended up spending 3 weeks over in Thailand. Yeah. And when we were in Thailand, we were involved with an organization that was rescuing women and children out of prostitution and exploitive situations. And that whole time over there, just it changed me. You know, seeing the travesties that were going on and how inexpensive human life was and the way that kids were being treated and women were being treated. When I got back to Australia, I got back and I had training like 3 days after I got back in, and I'm sitting in this boardroom and, you know, in there was 6 salespeople that were all on $120,000, $140,000 a year. I'm getting paid $6,000 a day for my time. So I'm sitting there and calculating in my head that this dealership training has cost this dealership $25,000 to put it on.
Yeah.
And remembering the stories of some of the kids we rescued and some of the girls we rescued and the fact of buying someone's freedom and buying them out of one of these exploitive situations cost as little as $1,500. And I just went, this is ridiculous. And, you know, I kind of walked back and walked away from that day going, there's got to be a better way, because I knew that the salespeople there would not do all of the stuff that was done. They wouldn't do the email follow-ups that they needed to. They wouldn't go back and look at old leads and all of the stuff that I knew would make dealerships, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. I knew they wouldn't do it. So it kind of dawned on me of going, well, if I can figure out how to automate or outsource all of these systems, instead of businesses paying me to train their sales team for them not to actually do the work, they could pay me to build the systems, and then I could go create jobs in these communities and use my business as a way of creating jobs, keeping these women off the streets, giving them alternatives to prostitution and to, you know, that all the exploitation that happens. So it took us about 2.5 years of trial and error and sort of testing, looking at different systems and how we can kind of go about, you know, looking at quality control and looking at how to be able to manage that process remotely in a way that actually delivers the results. But as we kind of, we did that, we ended up opening our first center in the Philippines in 2018, and have been sort of growing under that model ever since.
Fantastic. Matt, just to go back to that time in Thailand, how much of a shock was it to know and understand that $1,500 frees a woman from a lifetime of pain and suffering? What was that moment like for you?
It was mind-blowing. And there was like one particular moment that there was this young girl that we saw on the street, and the short version of the story is we spoke to her, and this is about 4 o'clock in the Sunday morning. You know, we're out there. We sort of spoke to her, found out her situation, and said, we'll help. Come and meet us tomorrow. And we woke up the next morning and were led to believe that she'd actually been killed. So back of this church, bawling her eyes out over a prostitute we met in the streets 6-7 hours earlier. But turns out, you know, we just went, well, we've got to go to this place, and she walked through the door. So I don't know the whole story of what happened, how it got there, but when she walked through the door, it was just, you know, absolutely kind of mind-blowing. And, you know, and I actually had to go and pretend to this pimp and to this trafficker, I had to pretend that I wanted her as my wife and I was in love with her and all this kind of stuff. And I had to go pay her debts off and buy her freedom. And that cost $1,500. And it was like, I spilled that at the bar. That's nothing. That's getting paid $6 a day at the time. So it was a couple of hours work. And here's her being forced to sleep with 6 guys a day under the threat of murder, and paying her debts off and buying her freedom cost that. And, you know, that in itself was mind-blowing. Yeah. But what she did next was the real kind of catalyst that, you know, as soon as she realised, we took her out for dinner before we kind of, we're going to take her to one of the centres to sort of, you know, get her checked out medically and all of that kind of stuff. And as soon as she kind of really understood that we didn't want sex, we didn't want anything from her, and this was just us doing a nice thing.
Yeah.
Realised that, you know, she started wanting to give. And she found out we were going to an orphanage the next day and insisted on coming. So we pick her up next morning, and this is 30 hours after we first met her, 24 hours after we were crying in church thinking that she'd been murdered. Yeah. And she's dragging me around a supermarket, filling this trolley with food.
Yeah.
You know, juice boxes, poppers, lollies, you name it, just filled it. And then she took it to the orphanage, and I watched her give this food out for hours, play with all the kids and all that kind of stuff. And she had so much joy and happiness you know, on her face. And she came up to me and said, "Oh, thank you, Sir Matt. You know, those kids are so lucky that that you were able to buy that food." And I'm, you know, just sitting there and going, "What?" Like, it just, the way that she was able to kind of forgive and move on and actually want to bring joy to others after being in such a horrible situation. I just couldn't, you know, I couldn't get that in my head, and I couldn't go back to business as usual, life as usual, you know, but beforehand, and, you know, just going, right, the difference between sort of making money over here and saving lives over there just was this, you know, this whole contract. So it really did change everything.
And Matt, you sort of then decided that there needed to be more. So it wasn't enough for you to actually rescue these women and children. You actually wanted to create something that then gave them life purpose, so finding them gainful employment. And that sort of has led into part of your bigger business vision and mission. So can you tell us about that, Matt?
Well, it kind of happened by accident and almost by necessity that, you know, I went through what I've kind of defined as this evolution that I got back, and I just wanted to give.
Yes.
And, you know, so I would go and work, and then I'd go donate all the money and all of this kind of stuff. And a couple of things happened. The guy that took us over to Thailand ended up stealing about $30,000 off us. You know, because I've been over to Thailand with him and I knew his heart, and I know the good he does, I actually know he's suffering PTSD and, you know, he's warped in his sense of reality of okay for him to steal off other people if he's giving it to others. So that happened, which was a big shock, because $30,000 is a lot of so that happened, and then my wife gave us a sort of tap on the shoulder one day and said, "I need to ring the bank because we can't pay the mortgage this week because you've got too much money." So I kind of went and said, "Well, I've got to figure out how I can have more, because making money and giving isn't working. It's not sustainable." So it then kind of dawned on me of going, well, they need money, they need jobs. So instead of just giving all this money for them to go hope get jobs, why don't I just build a business that I can employ them?
Yeah.
And that was that kind of catalyst of how that sort of came, that came about, was that, you know, it's that kind of, you know, the light bulb moment of I'm training people how to sell. I know they're not doing the work because they don't have the time. They don't want to do it. It's repeatable tasks that salespeople and their egos say this is below us. But it makes an absolute fortune for businesses when they do it. So if I could figure out how I could get these women and these kids in these developing countries to be able to perform those tasks to the same standard, then businesses will pay me to set the system up, and then they'll pay them to be able to do the work, and voila, we're creating this business that, you know, the more jobs we create, the more profit we make, and the more profit we make, the more jobs we create. So, you know, growth and impact became very intertwined.
So, Matt, I want to now talk a lot about what O2O does. So that's online to offline. I thought I'd start by the name of the business, because it's kind of catchy. What's the story behind that?
Well, it started way back before everyone kind of knew what, you know, how big an impact the internet would have, and go, well, we need to create strategies to take people from online and be able to convert them offline. Yeah. So it was looking at, you know, back in the origins of dealerships, going, well, you've got all these online customers, but you've got an offline dealership and an offline site. So how can you take them from online, so from the internet, and convert them offline? And as the business has evolved and the times have evolved, it's still exactly the same principle. Yeah. You know, we're running more virtually these days, but we we still have physical businesses. There's bricks and mortar businesses and sales teams that need to get their customers from online and be able to kind of convert them in the offline world.
Yeah. So how exactly do you help businesses now? Take us through some of the things and the benefits of working with the team at WorkMan.
Well, the end benefits of what we're always looking to achieve is more leads, more sales, more profits, more time to do the things you want to focus on best. So how that looks varies a lot business to business, but the strategy remains the same, that we've got to take that backwards step and look at things from a different perspective first. Mm-hmm. And we've got to be able to assess the business, assess where their strengths are, you know, from a sales perspective, what they enjoy doing, and then also what they don't do well. And then we've got to look at how can we build the systems to plug those gaps in there. So we call it, we call it profit levers, which is based on a framework I learned 25 years ago, way back in the day, of any business and their income is based on four key variables: the amount of leads that are generate.
Yes.
The percentage of which those leads convert into a sale. The average sale amounts, and then also the frequency of purchase. And you can take that framework and
apply it to any industry?
Any business, any industry, and it's going to identify where the greatest opportunities are. And once you know where the opportunities are, you can then start building the systems to be able to focus on doing that. So, for example, if we're looking at a business, say, that is a financial planner or mortgage broker, for example, you know, their business is based on 100 leads. They might be able to convert 10 of them into clients. Their income might be $3,000 a client, and they might buy once every 5 years.
Yeah.
Is it just a random set of numbers? So most businesses will want to go, oh, let's generate more leads, because the more leads we generate, the more income we're going to make.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd sit there and go, well, what if instead of converting 10%, you converted 20%?
Yes.
And then you can plug that through and go, well, if you can convert 20%, you don't need to spend any more money getting leads, and you can double your income. That leads to the next question down of going, well, what do we need to do to increase our conversions from 10% to 20%? And in most cases, that's going to revolve around how can we get better at the lead handling process. So that could be, how can we respond to the leads faster? How can we follow up with them more effectively? And all of these things, which then when you had that roadmap of these are all the things we could do better, you look at the business as it sits and goes, well, we just don't have the time. You know, we're too busy doing other things. We can't do that.
Yeah.
So that's where when we have that level of clarity, it becomes really easy to go, well, here is a system that can work and here is a team that can do it for you. So now you don't need to worry about responding to leads in 20 minutes. You don't need to worry about following up with leads until they buy or die. You don't need to worry about all of these things, because they're all repeatable. They're all stuff that can be done without affecting the quality. You can template responses, and none of which is actually overly complicated, and we can get our team to do it, so you can then spend more time on the parts of the sale that you enjoy the best and deliver the greatest results, and you can go from 10% to 20%. Yeah. So that's kind of the framework. And you know, by the time you kind of take that through, every business has a different set of circumstances of what we need to do, and a different set of tasks that is going to have the impact in their business. But that decision-making tree and that sort of framework of how we get to those answers is the same no matter what business you're in, what product you're selling, what price point, or what market you're targeting.
Matt, how important is it to get the systems right? So I know from having worked with you that you help the particular business build the system, but from your overall perspective, how important are those systems to the overall success of the sales process?
As important as oxygen is to breathe.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, and this is an Edwards Deming thing, which is someone that I studied a lot of, which he has nothing to do with sales, but I studied his work and applied into the sales process of, if you can't define what you do in, as far as a simple, repeatable process, you don't know what you're doing. So when you look at the sales process, it isn't an art. It isn't, you know, it isn't magic. It's a series of simple, repeatable processes that if you follow, you can measure, you can manage, and then you quality control, but you can also performance benchmark. So having the system is the underlying kind of
the foundation. Most important thing to get right, yeah?
Because if you don't have that in place, then you don't know what you're doing. And if you don't know what you're doing, you don't know how much money you're missing out on.
Mm-hmm.
But you also don't know if sales start to slow. You don't know why.
Yeah.
And if you don't know why, you can fix it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
Matt, that is the crux of where you start is with a business is actually looking at what systems they do or don't have in place and then tweaking, fixing, realigning them so that they get better results by using that system?
Absolutely, because any business has things that are working well. We don't want to reinvent the wheel or, you know, try to create something that's overly complex. It's, you know, the goal of everything is simplicity. And it's predictability. So we look at what's already working and go, well, how can we make it work better? Or how can we make it work without you having to do it? Or how can we 2x what we're doing or 5x what we're doing and maintain the same levels? Or often is going, okay, well, if we're doing half of the job well and we've got a great lead generation process and we're generating heaps of leads through our marketing,
how can
we then make sure we're converting them well enough? Or if we're converting clients really well, how can we make sure we're getting more leads in?
Yeah.
Or if we're doing both well, how can we make sure we're retaining our clients longer so we can ultimately make more income out of them? So you look at where those opportunities are and then be able to kind of plug the gaps, and then you can underline that. You can go, well, here is the benchmarks of what we expect each step in that system to produce. Then it's just a matter of going and applying the process, looking at what's working, and if it's not delivering the results we want, we can look through the system and go, okay, well, it's at this step here where things are dropping off. Now let's look into why that's occurring. And that gives you the answers in a much quicker amount of time and much more accurately than any other way, because having the systems and having it all benchmarked out from start to finish allows you to ask the right questions, which lead you to the right answers. So that's how we go about it, and that's the kind of foundations of success.
Matt, your systems that you use are based on a combination of people power, I guess, artificial intelligence and technology to achieve those results. So it's for you, it's a combination of all of those things working in the right way around a system that you create that delivers the outcome that the company or business wants, and it works across all sorts of industries, doesn't it?
Absolutely, because we plug in different systems. So there is a plethora of amazing tools out there that solve part of a process. Like we have a tool that could take someone's LinkedIn profile and do a full detailed DISC analysis and give you a playbook of how to respond to this particular person that is scarily accurate.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing tool. But it doesn't solve the whole problem. You need to know how to use that tool in conjunction with other elements to go, well, we need to go find that person. We need to match that profile to our ideal customer avatar. We need to then engage them in a in a conversation and get them to respond to us, then we can do the personality profile to know how we can sell to them effectively. Yeah. So, you know, there's so many great tools out there that solve part of the problem. And there's also so many marketing companies that sell the same vision as far as, you know, what that entrepreneurial success is this amazing life. And they sell their kind of widget as solving that.
Mm.
Most people realize once they've been there, done that and used
it. Only part.
It's only part of the problem and only part of the solution. And, you know, sales is one of those things that you can get 8 out of 10 steps perfectly right.
Mm.
And the 2 that you get wrong mean you get 0 return on investment.
Mm. Yeah.
And unless you've got all 10 steps or 9 steps or whatever it is working, it ain't going to deliver any results.
Mm.
But when you get all of the steps working, the results can be transformational, can happen in a very quick timeline. So our philosophy is we want to put people first, and we want to have our team connecting all of the dots between the different systems and the different tools that are, different tools and the different systems that are working. But we want to have our people that are driving that as a whole end-to-end solution rather than just providing an AI platform or a tool that solves part of the problem.
Yes.
And leaves it up to you to solve the rest of it.
Yeah. Matt, in this day and age where technology is forefront, artificial intelligence is booming, how difficult is it for businesses and companies to stand out from the crowd and actually connect with the clients and people that they need to? And how do you solve that?
Look, it is increasingly difficult because different platforms, there's so many different people with different bits of information and different ideas, and you can go talk to 5 different people that have 5 different success formulas that are completely different. But more important than that, the challenges of what all this technology has created is it means as business owners and as salespeople, we're expected to be doing all of these different and all of these different tasks that fundamentally take us away from what we do best. They tie us to our computers, they tie us to our phones, they tie us to our sort of chat functions, and they make it harder for us to actually spend time one-on-one engaging in relationships and connecting with people that can become our clients. So it's incredibly hard, and I kind of really challenge people on is to overcome it requires a change in thinking. And to actually overcome that requires that kind of bridge between the traditional sales roles and the traditional marketing roles needs to kind of be aligned into this one customer journey.
Mm.
And you need to be able to spend the majority of your time focused on areas of your strength. And if you're a salesperson, that is spending time connected with people, engaged in conversations, talking to people, and the more you can do that, the happier you become.
Yeah.
But the more successful you become, and then all of the other tasks that go into making a sale that need to happen, build systems to do, you leverage outsourcing, leverage automation to do it and do it that way. But most people use automations as a way of replacing connection, replacing conversation, not enabling growth. So that's the challenge and how to overcome it. But it does require a different level of thinking.
Yeah, yeah. Matt, I want to know today, what is your ideal client? Who are the people, if you could have any people, companies, businesses, entrepreneurs on the planet, who do you like to work with the most?
I like to work with people that have a mission. They have something. They're not just out here to make money. Because making money is easy. They have to have some other purpose behind what they, you know, behind what they do. Mm. So that's kind of the start from there. They also have to like engaging with people and talking with people, because if you can't talk to people, you're never going to be successful in sales. Beyond that is then making sure clients have a product that usually is in the business-to-business space. That's where we do our work and have the most level of success, and also have the capacity to do more. So it's either through a leveraged type of product, or they have a sales team behind them, and they have that capacity to continue to grow as sales demands.
Yeah. Matt, in talking about sales, not every company or business has a sales team. Their sales team might be the managing director if they're a small startup company. How do you work with those businesses and companies where the CEO wears many, many hats and is actually the salesperson for the company?
So we'll start by getting an allocation of time. How much time can they spend on sales each week, and what does that look like? And we get them to commit to that by blocking it off in their calendar. And that could be an hour a week, 5 hours a week, 20 hours a week. Doesn't really matter what that is. But once we know what that is, we can then start to look at, right, how can we get the best results from that time? And that could be, right, we need to build a team that can operate either side of them and use that couple of hours a week for webinars or boardroom discussions or a kind of one-to-many type of thing, and then have teams doing appointment setting and teams doing following up on the back end. Or it could be building teams just doing qualified appointments. You know, again, the exact outcome and the exact tactics that we use vary from business to business.
Yes.
But it starts with, how much time have we got each week to commit to sales tasks? What is the best use of that time? And then what is the best systems to support that enable that optimal growth? And then we just get to that tipping point of, right, now, you know, now we've got $30,000 a month worth of income coming in. Now we can bring on a business development team, or we can bring on SDRs and some reps. And we can scale that beyond there. But, you know, they have to be able to have some time to commit to selling, or they have some budget to be able to pay someone
to do it.
Selling, because sales takes time.
Yeah.
And anything of value, you're automating it these days completely from end to end, is a pipe dream that just can't, you know, if you've got any product of value, and you don't have a million audience, you know, already engaged in a relationship, selling it automated is a pipe dream that people aim for without the real knowledge or tools to make it happen.
Yeah. Yep. So if anyone's telling you that you can automate the whole process, then they're not actually correct then, are they?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Matt, with all your experience and sales background, I know that you're an educator and a trainer. Is it your view that most people can pick up the techniques of making a good sale with a little bit of training and education?
If you want to, yes. The biggest obstacle in any sales success is mindset and your attitude towards selling. Once you get over that and you embrace it as something that is ethical, something that is good, and something that is, you know, it's honest, and you get over that part and you get comfortable with being told no, because we're all humans, and if you go back to caveman days, you know, being shunned from the tribe meant certain death. So because of that we have, as a society, we have this big need to be accepted, a big need for people to say yes. So we get hung up on people saying no and take it personally. Once you get over that, those kind of obstacles, you can learn how to sell effectively, no matter what your personality type is.
Ah.
How I sell is completely different how you sell, because we are personality type. So I'm going to use my strengths and you're going to use your strengths. And someone that might be a bit more analytical, a little bit more cautious in their personality is going to use their strengths. And there's ways that you can sell that effectively. So, you know, not everyone can sell effectively because not everyone can get over the kind of mental barriers.
Yeah, it is tough. It's a tough game, Matt, isn't it?
It is if you look at it, if you define success by yes and no.
Yeah.
If you look at success by, am I being authentic? Am I putting my best out there? Am I following a process? Mm. And am I measuring that process against benchmarks to know whether that's as effective as it could be or not?
Yeah.
It becomes quite easy and you detach that emotion from the results.
Mm.
But when people hang up on that, I need that sale today to survive, or I need that to feel validated, and that it becomes challenging, it becomes hard, and you know, you get bruised by the knocks and you get traumatized by all the rejection, and it can really kind of mess with you. So, you know, it's a mindset game, and it's a sort of preparation, but it's looking at it from the right angle.
Yeah. Matt, I think it was possibly you that reminded me that if you, the sales is just a numbers game, and if you know your numbers, then it will all fall into place. So if you know that out of every 20 conversations, you will have 5 sales or whatever your numbers are, they're just numbers pulled out of my head, but it is a numbers game, isn't it?
Look, sales is nothing more than a combination of maths, so a numbers game.
Yes.
Psychology and systems. If you understand the numbers, that not everyone is going to be your client. Not everyone is going to sell to you.
But you don't want them to all be your clients either, do you, Matt?
No. No, that's the thing. I these days, I go more from a reverse sales mindset of going, you need to sell me on why you want to be my client, not the other way around, because I have an abundance of clients. You know, I don't have an abundance of time, so I don't want to work with anyone that is not someone I'm going to have fun with and enjoy working for, or be able to, you know, be of the personality that I'll drop anything to go and help them and consider friends. Like if I can't see that happening, sorry, I'm not going to work with you. But, you know, back before, I would take on anyone and I would sell hard and I'd regret it. Regretted a lot. But numbers game, when I first started selling cars, my first ever sales manager worked through this thing, and it used to be 1 out of 4 people that walked into the dealership bought a car. And our average $200. So he would sit there and go, when someone walked into the dealership, just picture a $50 note on their forehead. And when they walked out without buying, shake their hand and say thanks for the 50. Because if you've done your job right, 3 of them are going to say no, 1 of them is going to say yes, but you follow the same process with all 4 of them. So therefore, the way that he kind of trained me to view it was, you're getting paid $50 to follow that process regardless of whether they bought or didn't buy. So I appreciate them for coming in, because if they don't buy, they've led you to the next opportunity.
So each no is a one step closer to a yes.
Fundamentally, yes. Mm-hmm. If you're following a process. And if it's working.
Yeah. Matt, I wanted to know some of your biggest results, some of the things that you've been able to achieve for your clients that have just really, you've thought, oh, wow, what a great result.
Look, the results that give me the most amount of pride actually has got nothing to do with sales. You know, listening to my team and looking at how my, the team in the Philippines grow and, you know, are enjoying themselves and are bonding and all developing new skills, that for me is worth everything. You know, that's the stuff that kind of drives me, drives me more than, you know, the hedge fund that we work with, that they have $1 million buy-in, that we're helping them land, you know, we help them land new clients. You know, the franchise coaching group that we completely re-engineered how they sold their franchises, that half their that half their client sale, and you know, all of the other clients that, you know, we've turned their businesses around, that, you know, we've saved them $25,000-$30,000 in sales costs, but we've added hundreds of thousands of dollars in revenue. That's
great. Good.
You know, and there's heaps of stories of that. But it's the team and the watching them grow and how we're able to kind of influence lives over at that level.
Yeah.
And start to do that is what's really driving me to keep growing so we can have more of an impact at that level.
Which brings me back to my final question for the day. Matt, what does your optimal future for you and the team at O2O look like? Tell me about that bigger vision for the team and what that looks like. Paint me a picture.
The vision that I've been stuck with, that you ask my wife, cursed with or blessed with, depending on the day of the week,
yes,
is we want to be responsible for creating 10,000 jobs.
Yeah.
So we've got a small team at the moment. We're miles away from achieving that goal, but we want to use our current centre as a framework to be able to open multiple centres throughout the Philippines and then take it over to Thailand and Cambodia and Vietnam, where there's a lot more exploitation happening, a lot more opportunity to impact lives and change, you know, communities. So that's the thing that really keeps me awake at night and scares the pants off me, but also what drives me.
Gets you up of a morning.
And gets me back up and, you know, taking the hits and being able to move forward.
Yeah, yeah. So essentially you've got a small team in Australia and a bigger team in the Philippines. So from a managing director's perspective, you're the boss. How do you manage that team virtually? What's that like for you?
Look, we are systems driven. So we have tools that we can manage operations. So, you know, we've got the tools in place that we can see whether the team are doing the tasks that they're supposed to do. We've also got a great leadership team over there that does the basics as far as, are they rocking up to work? Are they happy? Are they healthy? Are they productive? You know, they do all of that. We then have our kind of communication tools that we use. And where we're kind of evolving into that, like, because our kind of senior leadership team's only been put in place sort of over the last few months, so that's been laying a good foundation, is starting to really kind of build out the training and the training programs and the growth programs through from that. But it really is having the systems in place, having the right tools to measure and communicate.
Yeah.
But then really just trying to get out of the way.
Yeah.
And letting them do what they do best and letting them grow. Because the more that they grow, the more that we grow as a company.
Yeah, yeah. Matt, when we talk about having our virtual teams, they may be in the Philippines, but you've actually got off an office in the Philippines for them to come to, haven't you?
Absolutely. We have our office. We, you know, one of our kind of midterm goals is to actually buy a property over there that we can actually take our clients over. And do immersion work over there, introduce them to the team, introduce them to the office, show them through all of that. But, yeah, all of our team is managed in a physical location, in an office, which for me is one of those big success criteria. It's so much easier.
Yes, because you provide them with the access to the technology and the internet and the computers and everything that they need to do their work, don't you?
Absolutely, and it's that sense of community and it's that sense of team that, you know, home-based agents and when people are working from home, they miss that interaction.
Yeah.
And stuff. So, yeah, they might, you know, you might save 50 cents an hour, a dollar an hour putting someone at home, but you're going to get half the productivity out of it, but also the team aren't going to get nearly the amount of joy and the amount of fun. Like our team, we sent them away a couple of weeks ago on a retreat over a weekend that, as much as I wanted to pay for the whole event, my team refused to let me pay for the whole lot. So they contributed. So we paid for a big chunk of it, but they contributed. And it was their idea because they wanted to bond as a team, they wanted to get each other better. You know, it's almost like a family for them over there, and they're all working on different projects, they're all working with different clients, they're all doing kind of different things, but they all have that kind of sense of community, that sense of bond, that sense of team that drives them.
Yeah,
that drives them forward, and that's an essential, you know, ingredient in sustainable success is having, you know, having your team, whether it's remote, whether it's local, whatever it is, actually consider themselves as part of something greater than themselves, and that the team is greater than the individual.
Yeah. Matt, before we run out of time today, I just wanted you to let the audience know how they can connect with you, chat with you, to see if you can help them. I know that you can, but how's the best way for people to connect with you, businesses to connect with you?
Best way would be look us up on LinkedIn. That's where we're most active and spend the most time. So it's Matthew, spelled with one T, Boyle. Which you'll see my face there. That's that's where you said you're going to get connected with me directly, very, very quickly, or our website, which is onlinetooffline.com.au.
And those links for anyone listening will be wherever you see this interview. You will find those links to Matt, and you'll also find them on the tonylottis.com website under co-hosts and guests. You'll find a link there to connect with Matt and the team at O2O. In this day and age, it's becoming more and more important that we get our systems right. And I know from having worked with Matt that those systems are very good. And Matt also comes with decades of experience in this arena, and he's driven by a bigger purpose, a bigger vision, and a bigger mission. Matt Boyle, thank you so much for coming on Everyday Business today to tell us about O2O and how you work with businesses. I look forward to hearing more about your journey as we go along together, and I wanted to wish you an amazing Easter break, because I know you've been burning the candle at both ends on a whole heap of fronts. There's been some massive things happening within your own business in terms of growth and staff members. And so I know that you will be looking forward to a well-earned Easter break. Matt Boyle from O2O, thank you for being on Radio Tony today and the Everyday Business Show. Don't forget, audience, please reach out and have a chat with Matt and the team at O2O, Matt Boyle, 1T on LinkedIn, and O2O online to offline is the website you need to go to. Matt Boyle, thank you so much today.
Tony, thank you.
All right, my wonderful people, that is your lot for this week. We will be back next week with another Everyday Business Show. I wish you all an amazing Easter break. For those of you that are able to have a break, have a wonderful one. For those of you that are working through the Easter break, condolences, but enjoy anyway. Eat lots of chocolate, have a great rest, and we'll see you next week. Thank you, Matt. Bye for now.
Bye.
I want to do it to the best of my ability, because if I fail, that means I fail for my entire female nation, I call it.
Is that possible?